So the big question is this: how are real estate investors who don't have a ton of free time, don't have access to off-market deals, and didn't start life on third base, how do we grow a real estate business conservatively to support our families, finally leave the corporate rat race, and build a legacy? That is the question, and this podcast will give you the answers. I'm Ed Matthews, and this is Real Estate Underground.
This is the Real Estate Underground podcast show number 37. Hey, everybody out there in podcast land. This is Ed Matthews, and welcome to the Real Estate Underground podcast. Today is a really cool episode. I have my friend Sam Edinger here. Sam, you and I first met, I think you called my office pre-COVID. So it was probably 3-4 years ago. And so we've gotten to know each other over the years. I'm really excited to have him on. Not only is he a successful real estate entrepreneur himself, but he also runs one of the largest and fastest growing property management companies here in Connecticut called Ironclad Property Management. So Sam, welcome to the show and thanks for your time today.
Thanks, Ed. I appreciate you asking me to come on in your show. I'm excited about it.
Yeah, I'm glad it worked out. Like I said, you and I have known each other and of each other for quite some time, but there may be some folks out there who don't know who you are. So why don't you tell them who you are and what you do for a living?
Yeah, I appreciate that so much. So I want to go quickly into my story because my current story begins only when we met. But prior to that, I grew up in a family. I have 4 brothers, no sisters, poor mother. And ultimately, we all saw real estate as this thing that my father did. He never understood the stock market. He was a man who could build property with his hands, shop teacher, and he never understood the stock market. Wasn't a person that was able to understand return on investments and profitability and things like that, but he knew things that he could touch. And so what my dad ultimately did was he acquired properties and he bought really, really bad. He used to say things to us as a family, if I only have to pay $300 extra month after my tenant pays their rent, then in 30 years, it'll be paid off. Negative cash flow concepts, this my dad had. And now, literally, this period of time, when people see him, they say, wow, you poop gold. Like, you're like the Midas touch because of it. But the truth of the situation, what my brothers and I all learned was, even if you make terrible investing decisions, if you wait and hold long enough, and if you are resilient enough, and if you're willing to do what is necessary, you will have multi-million dollar portfolios. I can promise you of that, Ed. That's the biggest thing, that the takeaway that we, all my brothers learned from growing up with my father. And to this day, he has a multi-million dollar real estate portfolio. My mom never worked. My dad had a teacher's salary. So that's really kind of where this all began.
Your family story reminds me of a kid I grew up with. I won't use his name because they're a very private family, but he was the town plumber in the town I grew up in. And I went off to college and came back and bumped into my friend again. We hadn't talked in 4 or 5 years. And I was telling him that I was thinking about getting into real estate. And he said, oh, you should go talk to my dad. And I was like, well, your dad's a plumber. I get that. He goes, no, he invests in real estate. So I ended up buying this gentleman a turkey sandwich and we shot the breeze for about half an hour. And he's like, hey, you want to see some of my buildings? I detected some of and plural buildings. I'm like, sure. Yeah, absolutely. And he drove me around the town. I grew up in Westbrook and on the shoreline. And today those properties, the ones he showed me, have to be worth tens of millions of dollars. And what he would do is he'd live on, let's say he made $100 an hour. He'd live on $30 an hour. He'd pay $30 an hour to the government for taxes. And the other third of it went into a savings account that then bought apartment buildings and strip malls and garages and everything. And, over time he built one heck of a portfolio. So 100% right about that.
Yeah. Interesting story about that. As an aside, my teeth and all my brother's teeth were not paid with cash, but with barter. My dad would build decks and porches for the prices. And they loved it because they had expenses associated with the teeth that they could write off.
Right.
And they would have had to do the cash. So barter system works out really well where you can do that and essentially have to reduce the tax liability on both sides. So
a lot
of things like that. So continuing my story, went to college, got a degree in nuclear engineering and physics. But I always had a bug for real estate. Like, that's the thing about passion, right? You see something and you always have this bug. I left my company in 2008 in San Diego, California, and they gave me a book on landlording. So even at that point in time, the bug was already there. I was already thinking about investing. I didn't want to invest in San Diego. This was the 2004 to 2008 timeframe for a couple reasons. The first was, I knew that I did not want to live there forever. My family was in Connecticut. Yeah. And what we know about real estate is you can't really time the market. You right. can know that it is going to go up with time, but if you're only going to be there for 3 or 4 years, there's a chance it could go down. Yeah. And with that said, I saw condominiums selling for $300,000, $350,000 with no land in San Diego. And I said, I could buy a mansion in Connecticut. There's something weird here. So all my friends were buying properties. Lo and behold, 2008, I left. They all had to short sell or foreclose and this and that. And I just left and came back to Connecticut. So I had started, like you said, started saving money and with the intention of buying property. I bought my first property in about 2012. And this is when no one wanted to buy.
Yep.
And I said to everyone, I tried to scream from the mountaintop in my engineering company, this is the time to buy. I said, yes. Prices are low, interest rates are going down, and the people that lost their houses need to rent. So rents are going up.
Yep.
I said, this is a perfect storm. Why are people not buying? And so I bought my first few properties. I bought 5 or 6 or 7 houses, all under $100,000.
Wow.
And for the majority of them, they only needed paint and floors, resurfacing floors. Because what's interesting about properties that are built in the 1950s, which a lot of our more current Connecticut stock is, yeah. is they've got beautiful hardwood floors. A lot of times they put carpet over top of them, yeah. they rip up the carpet, resurface the hardwoods, and they just gleam again.
Yep.
And so I bought a property in Portland, Connecticut for $34,000. Put $34,000 in it, rented it out, ultimately refinanced it at $150,000. It's worth two something now. So wow. the bank gave me $110,000 for something I was only in at 70, and it still cash flows today. It was like shooting fish in a barrel, and right. I couldn't understand why people were not buying more. So started off 2012, bought one or two, 2013, two or three. I think about 2014, I bought 3 in one day. So I was able to do that really well. I kept loving real estate, kept the bug, kept going. Yep. I got really smart on it pretty quick, and some of it was just fortune. And some of it was strategy. So my wife never worked a traditional job, still doesn't.
Yeah.
And so she never had any income. So I didn't really want to, like, when I was doing the financials, try to put her into the mortgage, because it was just, she'd have to sign and it was more stuff for them to look at. So all the mortgages were just in my name. But then I started getting closer to the 10 mortgages. So then I thought, well, they're all in my name. How do I get my wife some mortgages? So we quit claimed all the properties that we owned in cash. We had like 4 or 5 of them into my wife's name. 2 years later, she was able to use that all as income. And she ultimately now has more mortgages than I have. And she's never worked since San Diego, a job that paid more than $20 an hour. And she works 10 hours a week, maybe.
Wow.
So she now has 10 mortgages. I think I have 7 or 8. I sold some recently. Yeah. One of the best decisions we made was to get a home equity line of credit. We basically, every time we got extra income from rents, we would reinvest it, paying down the home equity line, and then rinse and repeating. And that's how we were able to buy 3 properties in one day. I had enough money in my home equity line to have the down payment for 3 properties. It was easier than having to do all of the loan processing documents 3 times. So I was like, I'm just going to buy 3. So fast forward, continuing to 2018, at this point in time, the nuclear industry has had a lot of issues because of Fukushima and some overruns from some of the sales that they're trying to do. And I survived about 3 or 4 or 5 rounds of layoffs. There was a PE firm that was buying the company because it was in bankruptcy. I was tired. I was really tired. And I just said an ultimatum to my boss. I said, look, I need to be paid a lot more because you're grooming me to be this top performing engineer, possibly grooming me for management, or I need to go do something myself. And so at that point in time, ultimately they said, unfortunately, we can't do that. I said, all right, goodbye. That following Monday, I had already gotten into a real estate course to get my real estate license. So I left the company, and Monday I was almost full-time getting the work to get my real estate license. Did that as fast as possible. 2 years later, got my brokerage license. We'd met kind of early on when I was starting to try to grow the company.
Yep.
And 4 years later, we've about tripled in size since we initially started. My portfolio personally has doubled in size since then. And we're actually looking to buy a really, really awesome office building in the next month or so.
That's phenomenal. Congratulations. I always like hearing success stories from really good people. So congrats. Let's talk about your focus today and what asset classes you're seeing opportunities in. You mentioned office, and I'm really interested in that because the fact is that most people think that the office business is dead. And one key thing you said early on, and it reminded me of a Warren Buffett quote, you know, you want to buy when there's blood in the streets, right? And is that what you're seeing in the office space right now? Is that what attracts you, or is it something else?
I just look for things that I think are mispriced. That's really where I'm looking. And so in this case, looking at office, I've always seen people that talked about triple net leases and things like that. But I'm always scared to some level about that because of the fact that if that tenant leaves, how long is it going to be vacant for? In this specific case, the office building that we had literally is two stone throws away from my current house. It's a beautiful property. What I love about it is in the office space that it is, it's all like chiropractors, a tax person, super small spaces that rent for $300 or $400 a month. We've got a hair salon, a dentist. What's unique about all of those is you basically have to have a presence so that people can come in and see you. It's kind of hard to cut someone's hair without seeing them, right? And so from that perspective, even if this whole work from home movement continues to be very pervasive, there's always going to be a need for certain levels of office space. And so from that perspective, it's not that big of a deal. What also works is, like we know, I have a property management company, so I already know how to deal with tenants. And my business partner on this one actually has a fire protection company that he owns and runs. So he's going to do all the maintenance. So it's going to be killer. I expect to make in excess of 30% cash on cash, probably year one.
Wow. Pretty darn good. Very different from the multifamily world, right? Or the single family or rental world.
Yeah, it is. And that's going back to your exact question. That's where I think there's mispricing, right? I bought a year ago a 7-unit in Cromwell that was 5 residential and 2 commercial. So some people just go straight resi. Some people go straight commercial. So sometimes there's these tweeners that end up getting misloved and mispriced.
Yep.
And so finding those opportunities and then realizing the misvalue. The thing that I do, which is unique, is I have filters all over the place. I try to talk to wholesalers all the time. I'm constantly trying to find opportunities. My big thing, though, is I'm not going to stretch where I am. So some people are like, I'm going to go out of different states. Some people are, I'm going to go into areas I wouldn't normally. I stay really local to Central Connecticut. I think I am in 3 or 4 towns total.
Okay. All right. There's a huge amount of value in, especially when you're starting out and growing a portfolio, to be able to reach out and physically touch the asset itself. I'm just now, and I've been doing this for 12 years, just now starting to look at areas outside of Connecticut, places where it's a plane ride, not a car ride. But that's not for everybody. And I am a huge proponent of Connecticut as a rental market, whether office space and medical office space makes a whole lot of sense to me, professional office space as well. But even from a multifamily perspective, it's one of the best cash flowing states in the country. And it has been for a long, long time. And if you look at even the ultimate test, you know, the 2008-09-10 timeframe, like you were saying earlier, it was still a fairly consistent, stable market when it came to cash flow. Obviously, values went crazy and went right off a cliff, but even that was temporary. So let's talk about your focus these days. And I also want to get into your views on the market, because I know, and I watch them regularly, your market reports out on Facebook. So thank you for those. In fact, I quote you on a very regular basis. And I give you credit. I don't say it's my own, but nevertheless, I'm grateful for all the information you provide to the folks that follow you on social media. So let's talk about the market and what you're seeing these days and where is there opportunity in a general sense.
There's a lot of news media about the market crashing, things like that. I think what's unique about Connecticut is a few things. One, a lot of people that bought 2 families, 3 families, 4 families, they're owner occupants. Whereas historically they'd be investors, they're a lot of times living in those properties. And so they think about investing differently than a traditional investor who does it based on cap rates, cash on cash, things like that.
Right.
So what ends up happening then is we don't really have a glut of investors in Connecticut like you do in Phoenix, Arizona, Las Vegas, Nevada, places like that. Atlanta, Georgia is another one where, you know, it's been crazy, the valuations and things, but really there hasn't been much. What that does is it really puts a floor in our market. There really isn't people that want to sell because they're thinking about it differently, not as an investment, but rather as a place for them to live.
Domicile, yeah.
And so from that perspective, I really think that we're pretty much on a floor. It's not going to go down significantly. What I would say, though, is there's ways to predict when it's going to go down. And so I think you can do that and look at that exercise to really know whether or not the market is turned. The first thing that's going to happen if the market starts turning is you're going to have more properties coming on the market. And I think we are starting to see that.
Me too.
The reason for that will be twofold. One, because market properties are not selling as quickly. And two, because just more people are now interested in selling. What's happening, especially in Connecticut, is because interest rates are so low, or were so low, and because of the fact that they are actually living there, they'll need to buy a new property. They're thinking about things differently. Why would I want to downsize from my 3,000 square foot house when my payment on a 1,200 square foot house would be exactly the same because of the change in interest rate?
Right.
So we're not seeing any of these properties coming on the market like you are in some of these other areas. So that's the first one. You're going to have properties coming on the market. And it started to happen a little bit. The second thing that's going to happen, and it goes along with this, is you're going to start seeing properties that are on deposit coming back as active. Because what has happened is there's so many people, I'll take it even if it has tons of things, I don't really need to renegotiate. And so from that perspective, it's going to come back on the market, and that's going to also allow for the inventory to happen. And then it's going to be owners that are pressed, that have to sell. And so what they're going to do is start capitulating and coming down in price. So that's the third portion of it. So I'm watching both of those metrics, whether or not there's a lot more inventory coming on the market, there's not, and whether or not there's a lot more properties coming off the market or back on active status. And I really haven't seen enough of that to indicate that it's really going to drop precipitously. I think if it does happen, we will lag other places,
yeah.
But I haven't really seen it that much in Connecticut. It's really micro markets that are not in Connecticut, other parts of the country that really are going to see a lot of this.
So those are three really interesting points. And I agree that those are the same metrics that I pay attention to when I'm trying to figure out the health of this market and where it's going. The second one that you made, assets going under contract and then coming back out. So what do you think is driving that? Is it they're not appraising out, or are there other issues that are occurring behind the scenes?
I think what happens is agents start to see what's going on. And so when there's 15 offers, you've got to get this or you're not going to get another property.
Right.
Whereas now you only have 3 or 4 offers. We just put a property, a flip on the market, and we were able to get one offer in a week and a half. And I was worried that we overpriced it. Right? Because the market's starting to change. But even with these high interest rates, we got a market-based offer that I'm hoping is going to go through. Everything looks really good so far, and we're still going to make good money on that flip. But at the same point in time, it doesn't always happen that way. But I will say that when there's 15 people behind you doing it, you kind of like, I have to buy this, otherwise I'm not going to find another. Whereas when there's only 3 or 4 people really interested in putting offers in, well, now they're a little bit more emboldened. So it's more of a sign to me that while the supply is also still not coming up, the demand is not there either. So that's where the balance is.
Okay. All right, great.
Are you interested in real estate investing right here in Connecticut? Ever wonder where all those real estate investing pros hang out to network? Did you know the Connecticut Real Estate Investors Association will introduce you to those investors and will help you learn how to find deals, fund those deals, and even teach you how to do it without leaving your current job? Go to ctrea.com, that's ctreia.com, and click on the events button to register for an upcoming event. Hope to see you soon.
Buying investment real estate is both thrilling and sometimes stressful. Without a lending expert by your side, most investors don't stand a chance. That's where CT REIA Funding comes in. CT REIA Funding was founded by investors to help investors just like you fund their deals. Whether you're buying a single family rehab, an apartment building, or really any investment property, our team will understand your deal and help you close quickly. Go to ctreiafunding.com or call us at 860-876-0572.
Let's talk about your property management business, Ironclad, and what you're seeing in terms of your clients and what they're thinking.
Yeah, so it's interesting right now. I've actually sent out a video just like this to my clients, or communication just like this to my clients recently, about what we were seeing in the market. There's a lot of things that are going on the market that I'm sure all of the listeners here in 2022 are going to be resonating with. First and foremost is, especially in the C-class areas where we predominantly manage, tenants really live month to month. And so when you have situations where gas prices are going up, food prices are going up, everything's going up, if they don't manage their money well, they get squeezed and we have a lot more collection problems. So for us, we took a hard position on evictions and trying to start evictions very quickly because we want our tenants to know that if you don't pay your rent, you're going to have to find a new place to live. Right. So it seems heartless, but I actually think of it the opposite, where if you don't tell tenants that rent is most important, then they will not make rent most important. And correct. Then when you finally wake up and they're 2 or 3 or 4 months behind, the only option is eviction. Right. So if you can get them to recognize upfront that where they live is the most important thing for the health and safety and stability of their family, that's what we need to do. So I've had to educate a lot of my employees that being nice is not saying, okay, yes, we'll waive your late fee. And oh yes, don't worry, till the 25th or the 30th, we'll be okay. Being nice is, unfortunately, if you don't pay, I'm going to start an eviction because if you get too far behind, you won't be able to make it up. And so you have an opportunity right now to make it up and to reprioritize. So we're seeing a lot of collections issues. We're seeing a lot of eviction issues. We have a ton of issues with vendors right now. I'm sure everyone in the industry, vendors are in such high demand with the COVID going on and the unemployment benefits. Small shops that hired 1 or 2 handymen on their team, they were making more money being unemployed. And a lot of those handymen haven't come back on. They changed trades. We also have I think it's pretty much an epidemic, unfortunately, in our industry in the Connecticut and the country, where we don't have enough skilled laborers, electricians, plumbers. Most of them are boomers. And so they're actually starting to come out and retire. And we haven't put enough emphasis on restocking with trades. It's all been about, why don't you become a computer programmer, a computer scientist to make tons of money? Well, we need a lot of electricians and plumbers. That's actually for me and for any of you guys that are young on here, I think the easiest way to make a lot of money in the future, go get your plumbing license, go get your electrician's license, and then get great at it, start a good little company and be responsive. Respond to every single person that comes up, even if it's I'm really sorry, I can't support you right now. Hopefully you'll think about me in the future, but we're so overwhelmed right now.
Right.
People appreciate when you just call back. And so many of our tradespeople don't do that. So I think that's, I'm encouraging my children to think about it, not going to college, even though I'm college educated, they're smart enough to go to college, they will make more money running trades.
Yeah. And you know, the thing is that how often, you know, obviously you and I are actually pretty good examples, although your degree was far more technical than mine. I was an English and mass communications major. My friends would submit that I majored in beer. So I did not cover myself in glory at college. But the fact is that how often, unless there's a truly technical major, you know, my wife's an accountant. She makes candy for a living right now, right? She works for a candy company. I was an English and mass communications major. I buy and manage multifamily buildings right now. You're a nuclear physicist and you run a property management company and run your own portfolio and, you know, a whole host of other things. So your point is well taken. For sure.
And I think that's the truth of education. Education is not about going in and saying, oh, I'm going to be an engineer for my entire career, or I'm going to be an accountant for my entire career, but I'm going to learn how to learn. And I can apply, and I do apply the things that I learned in my engineering school in the work that I do every single day.
It's
about problem solving. It's about things.
Absolutely. 100% agree with that. Yeah. It's about how to break down a problem, how to think it through, how to solve that problem, how to work in teams, how to create operational leverage, all those things, right?
Absolutely.
So you obviously are an incredibly smart and talented person. So you could probably do anything. And I know that your parents had a huge influence in terms of you going into the real estate business, but I see a lot of entrepreneurs, either folks that are succeeding like you and your family, or folks that are just dreaming about it and looking in from the outside thinking, gosh, I wish I could move forward. What do you think are some of the qualities that separate those folks that are successful entrepreneurs from the ones that either don't pull the trigger or are struggling?
There was a saying or something, there's a person was going to Antarctica and they knew it was going to be tough. It was either that or the North Pole.
Yeah.
And what he did to motivate his people, which people would think is completely crazy, is he burned his boats.
Yep.
If you burn your boats, you can only go forward.
Right.
So to some level, you know, you could say, well, that's really, I'm not willing to accept that risk tolerance. Right. I don't really want to do that. But for me, buying the real estate was a way to kind of reduce my risk to quitting my job, starting a company. That's how I did it. But I think it's that drive, right? That's part of it. Another part of it is hustle. Like my dad, like to this day, he goes and he doesn't even use me as a property manager. Let's just talk about that, right? Kind of a funny thing, but that's how his mentality has been. If you want to be successful in this, then you don't have to pay that 10% for property management, and you can do it yourself and you can do your own maintenance. That's great. What I will tell you is you're not going to be able to scale to the level that you and I are. You're essentially trading time for money, right? You did your time going there, picking up the rent. Everything else is money. My dad's solution to not evicting tenants is to every time that they say, I have money for you, he goes and drives to their house to pick up the money. That is not something that I'm going to do, right? No. Like, it's different. But from that mentality, he can have success because he's willing to put in the work and hustle. So I would say hustling, the drive is another. I call wholesalers all the time and just try to get on their lists. I make things like interactions with you and long-term relationships. I try to figure out who are the players in the industry that are moving things forward, and I try to get in those circles. You never want to mentor down. You want to mentor up. You want to find better people than you. You want to add value to them so that they're not just like you're an anchor. And then you basically provide value to them, and then they will put you into their circles. And you keep doing that over and over and over again, and you're a multimillionaire.
Yep. Yeah, you want to surround yourselves. You know, you don't have to leave your friends behind, but you want to surround yourselves with people who are smarter than you so you can learn from them and constantly never, ever stop being curious, never, ever stop growing, right?
And that's the other thing is finding your passion, right? When they talk about it, I think, good to great, there's three circles. There's one that is you are passionate about it. The second circle is you are great at it. And in the area, you can monetize it. So if you can get those three circles and you do them all really well, and you really are good at all three, you're going to make tons of money. And the problem is if you're great at it, but you don't like it, you're not going to do it that much.
Right.
And if you're great at it and you like it, but it's like art history, you're not going to make any money at it. So it's the intersection of those three circles. And when you find them, then you're going to beat everyone else. If you love it, but you're not great at it, someone that's greater than you will eventually get into that circle. So for me, that's what real estate's been. I've been wanting to do real estate, loving real estate my entire life. I talk, eat, breathe real estate. My wife is sick and tired of it. The people that I like to hang out with are real estate investors. Like, this is my passion.
We're all real estate nerds. That's true.
And that's the interesting thing about that. And you can ask, well, why did you start a property management company? Like, that's all property management companies are, is dealing with real estate investors. Like, I talk with people from Bigger Pockets and Facebook all the time, mentoring them, coaching them, trying to help them, just like Citeria.
Sure.
Trying to help them be successful in this crazy game of real estate, because I'm passionate about real estate. It gets me going. I read, I study. And so for that reason, you know for a fact that I am driven in real estate. I also like to think that I'm great at it. And then I also know you can make lots of money at it. Because those three intersect, I have a multi-million dollar real estate portfolio already. My new goal was to go from 50 units to 200 units solely owned in 10 years. And if I continue on, I'll have over 1,000 units 10 years thereafter. So it's
fantastic.
And the question then is, well, how do you scale it up? And that's where it goes back to engineering and all the things that I've done previously.
Sure. So you mentioned that you read and study quite a bit. I tell everybody that we meet here on the show and elsewhere that leaders are readers, right? And so how do you consume information, podcasts, reading, audiobooks, whatever? And also, what kind of books are you reading these days?
Yeah, so I agree with that wholeheartedly. That's actually the entrepreneurial journey. It's a journey of self-actualization. You're developing your best self.
Amen.
And I've read a number of books recently, and I haven't read any in a while, and that's shame on me. But one that I read recently that really resonated with me is called The E-Myth Revisited. So what that is about the entrepreneurial myth. The entrepreneurial myth is, and hopefully you guys can all resonate with this, or you will at some point, you say, oh, I want to start a property management company because I love managing property. So you go ahead and you start doing a good job, and people say, you know, Sam, you're doing a great job. I want to give you more property. And then you're like, oh, that's interesting. Like, now I need to hire a person. And then you hire a person and you assume that it's going to work out. And that person doesn't work out and you have to fire them. And then now you have all these other things to do and you don't have enough staff. So you hire again and you hire again that. And this just kind of keeps resonating over and over again, because that is the entrepreneurial myth, that everything is easy, that you just do the work and you just reap the reward.
Right.
When in reality, 80% of businesses fail in the first 2 years. And of those 20% that succeed, 80% of them fail within the first 10 years. So what is the reason why that failure occurs? And it's because of that entrepreneurial myth that you can do everything, right?
Right.
But what are the businesses that actually do succeed? McDonald's is a perfect example. how do they succeed? They're succeeding not in actually running operating stores. In reality, they lease spaces. But what do they really do is they sell systems and processes and a training regimen that if you do this, you will be successful. And if you deviate from this, you will not be successful because we have perfected making hamburgers. And so the franchise model is what is the way of being successful in real estate. And so what I'm doing with my business, and I encourage anyone that has a business to do, is to think about it like a franchise. I want to sell my business in the future, but I want to offer it to a bunch of other people to replicate the things that I have done already. You're going to do things very different in that situation than you are just thinking of it as, I'm just going to run this business. And so that's where I do a lot of my thinking and processes. How do I automate my sales marketing systems? How do I do touch points from clients so that it's timely without having to do a lot of work? How do I automate and make successful my training programs? How do I train team members? All of that is the part of the things that I'm doing. And with that, in that regard, just like McDonald's, I don't have to hire $100,000 a year people. I can hire people with relatively low skill, train them up, teach them how to do it, and then be successful.
Yeah, it's fascinating. The idea of systems, I think, and I wholeheartedly agree with what you just said. The whole idea of having systems, it separates you from having a job to being an actual business owner and being able to work on your business, like you were just talking about, as opposed to in your business where you're cranking the wrench every day and making everything go. Being able to bring someone in cold, and they may or may not have experience, but they've got integrity, they're passionate about wanting to do a good job, and you know all the other things culturally that they're a fit. The skill sets that you put in place, you know, not only are you teaching them how to do their job, you're teaching them how to do it your way. And that's incredibly important. And the more you work on your business and do exactly what you just said, the more successful you're going to be. Because, you know, I went away on vacation for a week earlier this summer and I didn't really get any emails from my team. I didn't get any emergency phone calls. And I came back that following Monday and what's happening? And they reported back and we had our team meeting and everything was fine. And it was wonderful.
That's my journey. That's the journey that I think all entrepreneurs should have, is one of changing it from a job into a business. And so that's really where I'm focusing my attention on. And that's why what I would say that I'm doing is I want to grow not only the best property management company in the state, but I want to grow the best property management company in the country.
Well, you're certainly on your way. Congratulations on that. So let me ask you, we're coming up to the end here. When you're not talking about real estate, and I know because I am a very similar personality in this respect, I am a total real estate geek, and I know you are as well. In those rare moments where you're not actually talking about real estate, what else do you like to do out in the world?
You know, what's interesting, it's another one of those things where like, it is my passion, is my complete passion. I'd say if there's other things, like I'm very family centered. I have my wife and six kids. All of my brothers moved back to live close to my parents. And so we get together a lot and things like that. It's very interesting, the dichotomy of me with my brothers and me in this forum where I seem like a complete extrovert who wants to share, and my brothers still think of me as this, you know, puny 10-year-old kid they just want to like pick on. So family is very important. That's a lot of the things that I'm doing. One other thing to kind of go back into this whole discussion that we had before is you had commented about the fact that you reinvested everything. I did the same. I reinvested every penny that I had to get myself to where I am today. And so some of my philosophy is, what's your excuse? I drive a 1999 Nissan Sentra that I bought for $650 5 years ago. That's completely paid off, right? Do we need to have flashy cars and everything else as the end all and be all of this game that we're playing? And I would say no. But with that said, so things like, we're bringing an exchange student from Spain to live with us for 10 months, right? Like,
that's amazing.
We have the means to do that, but it's also like, why can't we all do our part to make this world a better place? Why can't we do what is necessary to have a successful business? And a lot of times that means sacrifice for today for the benefit of tomorrow. And that's what I do. And that's what I love to do. But I love family. I love sharing. I love serving. I really quit my job as an engineer because I felt like they wanted to exploit customers and I wanted to serve people. That's really what one of our company cultural mottos is: serve first, serve well.
Yep. I love that. So Sam, it's been a true pleasure to see you again, my friend, and hear how well your business is going and frankly, your perspective on the market and your philosophies on how you operate. I know you are proud and you should be of the way that you operate and the great company that you're building. And, you know, I'm certainly a huge fan of yours as well. Congratulations. I got one more question for you. And that is, so if somebody wants to meet you or get to know you or hire you to manage a property or just pick your brain on where we are in the market cycle, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Sure. So two ways. One is to email me. It's Sam, S-A-M, at ironcladpm.com, I-R-O-N-C-L-A-D, P as in Peter, M as in Mary.com. Or you can call me 860-254-7343, 860-254-7343. Leave me a message, email me. I promise you, I respond to every single person. I call everyone back because I really am passionate about helping people be successful in this crazy game of real estate.
Well, excellent. Well, Sam Ettinger, thank you so much for your time. Good to see you, my friend. Thanks.
Thanks, Ed.
This has been the Real Estate Underground Podcast, a CT REIA presentation. Don't forget to rate, subscribe, and share this podcast with your friends. If there's a specific topic you want us to cover, post it in the comments. For more information on the Real Estate Underground Podcast or CT REIA, go to realestateundergroundpodcast.com or ctrea.com. Until next time, happy investing.